Her academic life in the EM blog is bigger than an untreated hernia in an 80-year-old obese man.
Ouch!
Her team is smarter than the genetic crossbreeding of Dr. Spock and Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, baby.
She drops more pearls than a new Tiffany attendant. It's Michelle Lynn and the Lynn Sessions.
Lynn. I wanted to invite to the podcast today Dr. Christopher Doty, Vice Chair for Education and Program Director at the University of Kentucky's Emergency Medicine Residency Program and on the Board of Directors for CORD.
Chris is a brilliant educator, and recently he's taken up the torch to lead the fight on improving physician wellness. Much of this discussion springs from an email Chris sent out to emergency medicine residency leadership across the country in the wake of a tragedy at the University of Kentucky.
Dear colleagues, the unbearable has happened at the University of Kentucky. Last Friday, we discovered that one of our residents was tragically taken from us. It appears that the resident took their own life in response to acute grief over a moribund family member. As you might imagine, the residency, the faculty, the department, the institution in general, and certainly I have been devastated by this loss. I will not be sharing details about his death, except that this was completely unexpected by myself and his resident peers. There was not an obvious history of depression or warning signs of impending doom. He was struggling with some significant family stressors, but appeared to be processing those with support from the program. This is a catastrophic loss for our program and for his family and friends. While I am immensely embarrassed that I lost a resident on my watch and guilty that I didn't see this coming, this needs to be said. Honestly, I have struggled on whether I should write this email at all. I make this information public in order to shine a bright light on a problem that often lurks in the dark. Suicide, and specifically suicide in our trainees, is a significant risk, and we are at higher risk than the general public. In order to face this issue, we must acknowledge its existence. We must speak its name. We must learn about it and talk about it. I am absolutely devastated that one of my residents felt so alone and so afraid that he chose to end his own life. I am even more devastated to learn just how common this is. It is one or two physicians a day in the United States alone. This is a remarkable number to me. I send this email to turn our attention to ourselves and our trainees. This resident was already on my radar screen. I was already looking out for this. I knew he was struggling and undergoing stress, but I thought he was managing it. I missed it. I say this just to increase your awareness of your own residents that are struggling. This resident had many people that cared about him, and he was universally liked. Several residents made efforts to support him during his stressful time, and he was being very successful in the program. None of us saw this coming. I encourage all of you to renew your efforts on resident wellness and to carefully assess your residents who appear to be struggling or appear to be depressed. I will clearly be renewing my efforts to focus on resident wellness for my trainees and EM residents across the country. Perhaps that will be the legacy left by this tragic loss of this caring, promising, handsome, smart, successful young man.
Wow, that is such a powerful email. Even having heard this again, I mean, I've read it several times now, and I get always a little teary-eyed. It's actually a little hard to listen to.
Yeah, it's hard to read.
And I can imagine. It's something that I'm surprised, like you said, why haven't we shined a light on this sooner? Why does it have to be such a sentinel event to drive this? You said, I mean, it's extremely prevalent. It's one of those dirty secrets in medicine that it seems like we're not talking about.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess at my institution, it's a lot like ED boarding. We don't know how to fix that problem, so we don't even talk about it anymore. And I think, you know, in the greater EM community, we don't talk about it much because it's sort of a juggernaut. How do you address this? And I think the real problem is that I think the beginning steps to this are contrary to the culture of medicine.
Interesting. Where do you think emergency medicine fits into this entire spectrum? Because this can't be just an EM thing.
So we're particularly at risk. The data for physician suicide is not so clear for EM being at a higher rate, but burnout is at a higher rate. So I extrapolate that, and I think wellness is part of the larger category of what's going on. And it's pretty clear from some recent data that came out that emergency medicine is at higher burnout rates. And we see this across all acute care specialties that have sick patients. We see it in internal medicine and especially intensive care medicine and in general surgery and especially in acute care surgery. So EM is particularly at risk. And partly because I think that we sit on the front line of the ills of the world. we have this front row seat to all the bad stuff that happens. And I think that really takes a toll on us.
In preparation for this discussion, I'd actually gone back a little bit and looked at a few of the burnout literatures. And there's a particular author who keeps popping up. His name is Mark Linzer. Apparently, he's a division director of general internal medicine over at Hennepin. And he kind of narrowed down burnout risk factors. There are 7 of them. And as I was reading them, I'm like, oh my God, this is emergency medicine. And the 7 that he listed was 1, you have a high tolerance to stress. And that means all the stress is coming at you and you are just trying to hold it together until you break at the seams. I mean, that's the definition of the emergency department, more so than any other clinical practice that I know of. 2, your practice is exceptionally chaotic. I don't know about you guys over there in Kentucky, extremely chaotic over here in San Francisco. 3, and this one is interesting, is you don't agree with your boss's values or leadership. You know, we're doing fine, but you're never 100% in agreement. 4, you're the emotional buffer for your staff and for your patients for all the chaos going on in your clinical area. 5, your job constantly interferes with family events. Welcome to shift life. 6, you lack control of your work schedule and free time. And 7, you just don't take care of yourself. And if you have any one of these risk factors, it's predictive of burnout. And I'm like, wow, they just wrote our job description, it sounds like. And so it actually doesn't surprise me as much that emergency medicine's pretty high up there on the list of burnout rates.
Yeah, I think it was 1 on the recent data
really?
I read.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's try to tackle this little by little. The part that I struggle with the most is, you know, how do you even define wellness or burnout? And I try to explain this to people, and I don't have a good way of describing it. Is there such a definition, or how do you think of it?
I had always thought of wellness as occupational stuff, like, you know, having a schedule that was conducive to your personal life and being able to predict when you're going to be off and advancing your shifts in a way that sort of consistent with circadian rhythms and having some control over your work environment. And I think that's what we really focus on. But as I started looking more into this, I mean, there's a bunch of things that I was really not paying a lot of attention to. There's a bunch of spokes on a wheel where there's the occupational spoke where I had sort of paid attention to before, but there's also financial wellness and spiritual wellness and social wellness and intellectual wellness and, of course, physical stuff. So the physical stuff we think of in wellness, you know, getting enough sleep and getting exercise and eating well. I bet that a lot of training programs and a lot of CME conferences don't pay a lot of attention to that stuff. And talking about wellness, we talk mostly about shift schedules and sleeping and sleep science and that sort of stuff. You know, in my program, we talk more about REBOA than we do about wellness. Yet, the data suggests that 50% of emergency physicians are going to be burned out at some point in their career. And I think that's probably a low number.
50%. 50% of EM physicians report burnout, though that number may be low depending on what resource you look at. And that high a number makes sense because we don't control our schedules or our patient input, we don't take good enough care of ourselves, and we miss family events all the time. How many times have you had to say to your parents or your siblings or your friends or your significant other or your kids, "Sorry, I can't make it. I'm working that weekend." In spite of this being such a huge issue, we devote minimal time to it in resident training or at national conferences. But for our own sakes, it's time to turn more attention to these issues so we don't burn out.
This seems like a long-term problem with our emergency medicine mentality. It's like, let's try to fix it. There's got to be an answer. And the more and more I look into this, it sounds like it's a multimodal fix. I mean, how do we even wrap our minds around trying to address this?
Part of what I think the solution is that we have to begin to normalize the conversation around how stressful our job is. So I think that you're right, Michelle, that we do have stressful jobs, and we know we have stressful jobs, and our spouses and partners and significant others think that we have stressful jobs. But we don't talk a lot about that stuff with other doctors. So I think the beginning part of this is just really to normalize this conversation about how there's certain things in our lives or in our professional spoke that are really very challenging. And I think the reason we have not spent a lot of time talking about this is because it's breaking one of the cardinal rules. One of the cardinal rules of medicine, and especially of emergency medicine, is don't be weak. Don't be the weak guy. Don't be the weak girl. Be strong. Show up on time. Be stable. Be able to handle all this stuff. And the idea that you're going to come talk to one of your partners or talk to your program director or talk to your medical director and say, you know, God, I've been feeling down about my practice recently. I feel like I'm a bad doctor. And truthfully, Michelle, I mean, I think every emergency physician has these feelings that, you know, on some days they just feel like they're a bad doctor. And there are all these things in our professional lives. And I don't think we're alone on this, but certainly with emergency medicine, there are all these things in our professional lives that put a ton of stress on us and we don't talk about it. Talking about your exhaustion, talking about parenting difficulties, talking about financial issues, talking about depression over a bad outcome. There's just things that we don't talk about at all. And I think that is part of it, is that we don't have this community within our own group to even normalize the conversation about how stressful things are. So let's just think about some of the examples of the difficult things that we don't talk about. We don't talk about our own depression. We don't talk about these second victim issues. What happens when somebody comes in who we can identify with, or a child comes in injured? We don't talk about anxiety or worries about patients. We don't talk about when we feel like a bad doctor. We don't talk about getting sued when we really mess something up and how making a medical mistake doesn't make you a bad person. And then getting sued when you provided excellent care and you're getting sued anyway and being dragged through that whole process. We don't talk about family drama. We don't talk about commitments to the family that we feel like we may not be, you know, meeting. We don't talk about our physical exhaustion. We don't talk about parenting difficulties. We don't talk about sick parents if our father is hypertensive or diabetic and we're worried about them. We don't talk about our own financial issues. There's just all these things that are normal human being stress things that we don't talk at all about, let alone about all the stress that we're having because we have this front row seat to the ills of society.
This is really interesting because we often talk about our EM family, the nurses, the techs, the EMS crews, the PAs, the NPs, and the other docs we spend so much time with, but we don't share the ups and downs with the family the way that we should. I think if you ask most emergency providers if they think they're good at what they do overall, they'd probably say yes. It would seem then that they're pretty happy. But if you got more granular and asked, do you ever feel like you're a bad doctor? You get a much different answer. We all have these low points and they don't define us. What defines us is how we address these low points. And part of that is letting others in and letting others help. What we need to work towards is changing the foundation of the way we think about these issues. And that starts with normalizing the behavior. Everyone needs to understand that each of us goes through this.
What are the obstacles in trying to address burnout and trying to get wellness and resiliency more to the forefront of the culture of medicine?
So I think this culture of medicine, where the prime directive is don't be weak, is an issue for us. Also, I think it's mental illness is not okay. Anxiety is not okay. So in my own life, when I was back in Brooklyn, I had a marriage dissolve, basically, and I was just torn apart by it. It was personally probably the most difficult thing I've ever gone through. And I was sort of in the driver's seat for this, but I still felt awful. So my mother, who's a pastor, a Presbyterian minister, said, you know, I should really go to counseling. So I started talking with somebody, a therapist. And I tell you, at the time, I never told anybody I was going to a therapist. I mean, my closest friends knew, and nobody else, because it's just not okay. The other obstacle is that the time to teach this competes with the time to talk about Roboa and the time to talk about EDECMO and the time to talk about sepsis 3 and SOFA, area under the curve. So all these things that we have to teach in medicine, specifically emergency medicine, they compete with this. And sometimes the things that don't look like big problems to us get shorted by these scary things. The residents want to hear more about submassive pulmonary embolism than they do about epistaxis. And they want to hear more about epistaxis than they do about sleep science. I think they all realize that it's good for them to hear about, but when we're planning what our curriculum is going to be, these softer things get really shorted a little bit. And I think that's probably true of CME conferences as well, but certainly the formal training of residents. So I think there's some things that we can do, but I think we have to just make a commitment that this is something that we have to teach. It's something that we have to learn about.
What we need now to make this happen is more role models like Chris to share their stories, to push for inclusion of these areas at national conferences and within residency education. We can all name leaders within our fields for pulmonary embolism education, cardiology education, critical care education, palliative care education, but can we name leaders for physician wellness education?
Any take-home messages that you want to leave with the listenership?
So I think we have to open the discussion. We have to be willing to talk about with ourselves, with our trainees, with our partners, with our mentors, our mentees, the idea that this is a normal part of what we do in emergency medicine. And we've started to do that here at the University of Kentucky. I now have a project where we're going to meet with small groups of every third-year medical student that comes through to begin to open this conversation with them, not just about emergency medicine, but about medicine in general. I think one of the next steps is to normalize this conversation by, to use your words, role modeling, to have people stand up and say, yeah, I was really depressed during residency, or yeah, when I went through that legal suit, I really felt like a bad doctor for a while, or you know, somebody to say, yeah, I've struggled with anxiety my whole career. And I think once we have people that are willing to stand up and say, yes, I'm an emergency physician, that happens to me, that issue is also my issue, then it becomes normal. You know, tribalism is such an interesting thing between us and them. And people are always worried about being them and not being us. So I think that if you can see that you are part of us, that this happens to leaders in our specialty, it happens to your medical director, it happens to your partner, then you just feel okay with that idea. It becomes normal. I think we have to acknowledge that it's a hard job. I think we have to allow people to feel down. You shouldn't want to fix them. Commiserate, don't correct. The right answer is not to say, well, you know, link them all the good things in your life. You know, buck up, little camper. I think it's, yeah, that stinks, man. I'm really sorry you're having to go through that. I felt that way before, and I think you're going to feel better, but I'm sorry that you're feeling like that. And I think that is immensely impactful, immensely powerful.
It's just crazy that one of the most honorable jobs in the world comes with such dirty little secrets about physician unwellness, depression, suicide, all stuff that, for the most part, have gone unspoken in the past. And there's actually a really cool quote that I saw recently by Dr. Robert Waugh. He's a former president of the AMA, and he said, the most important patient we have to take care of is the one in the mirror.